about how to support your work.
Sure. So fairvote.org is our website. You can find out how to sign up and get involved at whatever level you feel comfortable there. So if you want to sign up for our e-newsletter, that would be great. If you want to donate to us, that's, you know, even better. And if you want to get involved, by all means, you can email me. It's just dspencer@fairvote.org.
Awesome, Drew.
And I'd be happy to hook you up with somebody in our outreach department.
Thank you so much for being with us, Drew Spencer. That's it for our show. Find out more about Drew Spencer's work at www.fairvote.org and read about the Portland Community Equality Act at portlandonline.com. Auditor and the RCVAct.com. Get active with the League of Women Voters in Oregon. They're at lwvor.org, and in Washington, lwvwarg. Washington State, stay tuned. Thanks for listening.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud sponsor of the We Real Cool film series at the Clinton Street Theater. This month is the amazing Nina Simone, showing Thursday, November 19th at 7 p.m. Nina Simone was one of America's true musical geniuses. With her unique signature mix of layering folk, gospel, classical, pop, and African music, along with a revolutionary vision of Black freedom, pride, and defiance. Again, that's the amazing and revolutionary Miss Nina Simone, showing as part of the We Real Cool film series on Thursday, November 19th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Portland Veg Fest the weekend of November 14th and 15th at the Oregon Convention Center in Portland. Portland Veg Fest is the largest vegetarian event in Oregon with food samples, speakers, chef demonstrations, and speakers such as Dr. Michael Kapler, cancer researcher Dr. Paulette Chandler, and more. Again, that's the Portland Veg Fest the weekend of November 14th and 15th at the Oregon Convention Center, 777 Northeast Martin Luther King Boulevard in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
You know, a lot of people don't bother about their friends in the vegetable kingdom.
This is KBOO Portland, where the time is 10:02 a.m., and it is time to check in with our siblings in struggle in the San Francisco Bay Area from KPFA Berkeley, a Pacifica Radio affiliate. It's Flashpoints with your host, Dennis Bernstein, right here on your community radio, KBOO in Portland.
Flashpoints in ISIS claimed multiple suicide bombing in Beirut, kills over 40, and seriously wounds over 200. We'll feature a report from the ground in Beirut on the deadly bombing. Also, Dr. Mads Gilbert on treating the victims of two murderous Israeli assaults on the Gaza Strip. And we'll be joined by our own Francisco Herrera to talk about his recent campaign for mayor of San Francisco and what comes next. I'm Dennis Bernstein. All this straight ahead on Flashpoints. Stay tuned. And you're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. My name is Dennis Bernstein. We are honored to have in the studio Dr. Mads Gilbert, and we'll be speaking to him. But first, we must go to Beirut, Lebanon, where there was a terrible bombing, and our special correspondent, Rania Masri, has a lot to say about it.
My name is Rania Masri. I'm a Lebanese professor and activist here in Beirut. Several hours ago, there were two suicide bombers from ISIS that launched bombs in a busy neighborhood, civilian residential neighborhood. The second bomb was actually launched close to the door of the school. 43 people thus far have been killed, and approximately 239 people have been wounded. And I just need to repeat this. I mean, hours after the bombing, what we can confirm is 43 people killed, 239 wounded. Again, a terrorist attack in a civilian neighborhood in the southern suburbs of Beirut.
Say a little bit more about exactly what the suburbs look like and how this might have reverberated. Tell us more about the geography, please.
I mean, this is a economically mixed, religiously mixed neighborhood, small, tight streets, very, very busy. This bombing occurred around 7 p.m. tonight, so it's a Thursday night. Again, the streets are very, very lively. They're typically filled with children and adults and families. The streets are also not just civilian, but schools and marketplace. And there was one suicide bomber that released a bomb in the neighborhood, and then 7 minutes later, another suicide bomber released his bomb to cause maximum deaths. There was a third attempt by another suicide bomber to enter into a mosque where there was a religious gathering. And one Lebanese hero was able to tackle that suicide bomber and prevent him from entering the mosque. And as a consequence, Adil Tirmus, who was able to tackle the third suicide bomber, died in the consequence. There was a fourth bomber who was captured by the community. And, you know, we don't know if there was a fourth bomb, but we know that there was a fourth bomber. So this is an act that ISIS has claimed responsibility for. It is an act that any sane individual would recognize as a terrorist attack against a civilian neighborhood, and not what the New York Times and the BBC and Reuters and AFP and numerous others of these mainstream papers are calling simply a bombing in a, quote, Hezbollah stronghold or a Hezbollah bastion. This was a terrorist attack against a civilian neighborhood in a very busy time, designed to cause maximum death and maximum casualties.
Casualties of civilians. Do we know who some of the civilians are? Are they teachers? Are there children among the dead and the wounded?
We're still getting the names. Thus far, we know that two young staff people who worked at the American University of Beirut are among the dead. There's another Palestinian who, is a refugee in the Burj al-Barajni refugee camp, very young, 20-year-old, who's also among the dead. You know, likely there will be children whose names will be released who will be among the dead. Naturally, the names are not being released until all the families have been notified, but we expect there to be children and mothers and fathers and young and old among the dead. And unfortunately, we also expect that many of the wounded may not be able to survive, and many of the wounded are also children. What we've seen within the bombing is, you know, we've seen books on the ground, backpacks on the ground. Like I said earlier, the second bomb was actually released at the door of a school. So we do expect there to be numerous civilians, actually all of them are civilians who have been killed in this terrorist attack.
About what time did the bomb start going off? Local time?
Approximately 7 p.m. local time, give or take. And that was the first bombing, the second bombing, around 7 minutes after that. Give or take. I was in Beirut when it happened, in a district a little bit far away from the bombings. So we got word about it. But again, we're still trying to get the details, and we're still in shock over what has happened. we're tired of these bombings, we're tired of these terrorist attacks, and I have to say, we're also very tired of the way that Western media presents these attacks in a justifying, racist tone.
Let's talk a little bit more about that, Rania Masri, because it's our job here on Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio and the alternative media to try and do correctives, get the cutting edge on what's going on before the big disinformation machine unfolds. Now, you said that it was characterized as a Hezbollah stronghold. We know that Hezbollah is in there fighting against ISIS in Syria. The Russians are fighting against ISIS. I understand my understanding is the U.S. is supporting, funding so-called a war against ISIS. But how do we unpack this? Why would they translate it into a Hezbollah neighborhood? How does that work into the politics?
Every single time there has been a terrorist attack in this area, and this is not the first attack by ISIS against civilians in Lebanon, not the first, but every single time, Western press defines this area as either a Hezbollah stronghold or a Hezbollah bastion. And it's a language that gets people who are not familiar with our streets and our neighborhoods to envision a military, military barracks, or to envision, surrounded political party headquarters, rather than to recognize that what it is a civilian neighborhood. This is a language, again, that's used either by very lazy journalists or, more particularly, by racist journalists using a language that promotes warfare and that promotes racism and justifies these attacks. It's also important to note that the Western press has not used the word terrorism. What else would we call a bombing in a civilian neighborhood designed to cause maximum civilian damage and designed to put political pressure on the Lebanese government to release ISIS prisoners that are now in jail in Lebanon because of crimes that they have committed? What do we call this if not terrorist? Is it only that when, Arab blood is on the streets that we don't regard it as terrorist? Is that the way the Western press looks at it? So how else are we to examine this language that's used, and again, by Reuters, the AFP, the New York Times, the BBC, if not racism? I mean, if we had a bombing in any of the streets, anywhere in the United States, in any city, would the U.S. press not define that as terrorism? I mean, my God, there have been attacks against U.S. soldiers in the United States, and they've defined that as terror. And yet, when it's designed against Lebanese civilians and Palestinian civilians in our neighborhoods, in our capital, there is this language of justification by the U.S. press and by the European press, by the BBC. What else is this but not racism and not warmongering? Again, this language of stronghold and bastion causes people to think of a military barracks and not what it is, which is a civilian neighborhood in a densely populated city that has a mixture of markets and schools and shops and homes. That is the street that it is. Yes, it is a predominantly Shia neighborhood, but that does not in any way justify any of these crimes. And yes, ISIS specifically targeted this area to send a message both to the Lebanese government and to Hezbollah. But again, that is the definition of terrorism. That is not the definition of a mere bombing, which is a neutral language. And in no way is this neighborhood a bastion or a stronghold. And yet this is the language that the press has continuously used for years whenever there has been an attack in these neighborhoods. And it's appalling, and it has to stop.
And of course, it really does come out of this profound and violent bias towards Israel, because if Hezbollah is fighting in Syria, if you will, on the same side in the bigger picture as the Russians and the United States against ISIS, what would be the reason for this kind of logic other than Israel demands this kind of policy and this kind of U.S. corporate press coverage of anything that happens in Lebanon and in the region? When you say that's a real problem here?
Well, I would say Israel is part of it, but I'm not going to fully blame the Israeli government and the Israeli war machine on lazy, racist journalism in the United States. I mean, there's part of it which is the corporate purchasing of U.S. and European mainstream press. There's also, we need to recognize that ISIS has been supported and funded and armed by one of the closest U.S. allies in the region, which is Saudi Arabia. And yet we don't hear this level of criticism, lobbied against the Saudi Arabian government. So, yes, Israel is partly of that, but if we also notice how the word terrorism has been used by the Western press, it's only used when the victim is an individual that has to be humanized and is recognized with their full humanity. And it's discarded completely when the victim has to serve a dehumanizing purpose. Now, the Israelis take it, of course, to the full extreme, where a terrorist has to be an Arab. And if you have a Jewish Israeli that commits a crime, then immediately that act is denoted into simply a bombing or a crime or an attack. In the United States, the word terrorist has been limited to when the accuser happens to be either Muslim or Arab. Just like the word thug happens to be used only when the accuser is African-American, and yet when a European-American commits a crime, then they use the language of, mentally unstable. So we have this discourse that's deeply racist that I would argue goes beyond Israel and the U.S. press and stems from a justification of the crime and a refusal to empathize or to connect with the victim. And this is what we see, and this is what the U.S. press and the BBC continue to do with regards to this region.
All right, Rani Amasri, just before we let you go again, so just to say there was a terrible multiple bombing in Beirut, and you're saying that over 40 people have been killed in the civilian neighborhood. It may include women and children among the dead. It was clearly a civilian bombing near a school. Any final things you want to say to us? We do want